Get ready. It's time to tee it up with Keith Jones.
Coming up on today's show, we take a trip down south and introduce you to Duger Balcom. And welcome back, Professor Big Win. So stay tuned and get ready as you tee it up with Keith Jones. All right. Welcome to the show. So glad to be along. Another interesting show this week. Not exactly where you thought we might go. We're going to take you down south. Now, you know, if you listen to the show recently, we've been on the road a little bit. A few weeks ago, we were at the Live event outside of Washington, D.C., our lovely nation's capital. Last week, Philadelphia, up around for the PGA Championship. And this past week in Charleston, South Carolina. Yeah, we got invited. Take a little journey down to Charleston. Have never been there before. And also got invited to take a little tour of Charleston, the historic district. It's an amazing city. It's an expensive city now, well, for what have you. But it's definitely worth the trip to get down there and see it. And, of course, one of our buddies, Darius Rucker, is originally from there. So we know a little bit about Chucktown and Mark Bryant from Hootie and the Blowfish is living down there. So a little bit of tie-in to the show. But when you're out and you're taking these tours, you never know who you're going to run into. And it's interesting because when you go to on any tour, you want to have the best tour guide that you can. And the one that we had knew a lot about the history of Charleston and all the old buildings and all the history and stuff, because apparently that's what he majored in when he was in college. But that's not how we knew him. He is a retired college basketball coach. I'm talking about not just somebody, any old body. We're talking about the Duger. You have to understand who Duger is, and it's Duger Balcom, who was at VMI for a lot of years and then ended up at the Citadel, which I think is how he ended up in Charleston, to stay there and enjoy. And I don't know why the coach is still working, but he enjoys doing what he's doing when he takes people around. So that's the little lead-in to this guest for this portion of the show, and that is Coach Balcom, who joins us from Charleston, South Carolina. Coach, it was great to see you. Nice to walk around with you. And here's a guy that looked like he just came off the golf course. He had his Quilhalla hat on. He was ready. I mean, he looked golf ready, and we will talk about that. But, Coach, thanks for making time to come on the show. Great to meet you by chance, and I knew you more by reputation than anything else, but appreciate you coming on the show.
Well, Keith, thanks so much for having me. I look forward to it. That's awesome.
Well, you know, you do a lot of things in life when you're coaching. We've covered sports for a long time. I mean, obviously, this is mostly a golf show specifically, but we've had a lot of artists. I mentioned Darius, been on the show before, and Charles Barkley and different people from different walks of life, because all the musicians want to be golfers, all the golfers want to be musicians, and all the athletes think they can play the game that is the four-letter word golf, and it doesn't come easy to them, and Chuck can tell you that firsthand from that standpoint. But when you were at VMI, you had some successes with the cadets, and then you ended up at Citadel. So you got two military organizations that you're dealing with. Now, where I'm leading this with the coaches, in our conversation a little off to the side, we had a couple of short conversations like that where people were catching up with the tour group, because you knew there's always some stragglers, that type of thing. But, Coach, you mentioned that you got out of coaching a lot because of the NIL, the name, likeness and image. I know that I didn't spell that in the right order. It doesn't matter. You know, the whole point is, because even at the military academies, which really surprised me when you said it, everybody's looking to get paid.
Yes. Yes, they are. I mean, everybody has their hand out this day and time, unfortunately. And the biggest thing for me, education, when you started talking to kids, education wasn't even mentioned. You know, field of study, what you want to do after school. Just changed everything. And military school was hard enough as it was, because we would get guys poached for, you know, come play for us. You don't have to wear a uniform. You don't have to get up at 6 o'clock in the morning. You don't have to lead this restricted lifestyle. So it was hard enough then. But then when you start adding money to the game, it just changed everything.
What I found interesting the last couple of seasons is the military academies, and I've did a lot of work broadcast-wise with the Naval Academy, U.S. Naval Academy, so I know it inside as well. But them and West Point and even the Air Force Academy at that beautiful country club out in Colorado Springs, they all say, hey, come play for us because we'll keep you together for 4 years. You have the same teammates, which is, in this landscape, very unusual these days.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the way to get good is to get old. You know, we used to always say that at military schools, if you can keep your guys together, and our retention at VMI was really, really good. And I think that helped our success there. We kind of found the demographic we were looking for and got kids that were serious about school and who happened to be really good basketball players and loved each other. And so that was a good formula for us. Kind of hard to match that at Citadel. You have so much going on in Charleston. And basketball wasn't quite as important in the pecking order there as it was at VMI. But, yeah, if you can get old this day and time, which hardly anybody can, I think it's certainly an advantage.
Well, there in Charleston, you also have the College of Charleston. So they play some big-time basketball there. They got a nice arena and stuff. So you're competing against that, really, as well.
Yeah, you're competing against that. crazily, more important, you're competing against 7-1 girls at College of Charleston because that's what they have. Now, that's great to recruit to, but that's not great once they get in school because they'd rather be on King Street than in the gym working on their jumper. So you had to deal with that. And at a military school, you are very restrictive. I mean, the kids can only leave campus a very small amount of time. And they see all their peers at College of Charleston going out on King Street or Charleston Southern doing that. And me having them there on campus, you know, it's just a whole different ballgame.
I thought it was just a 2-1 or 3-1 ratio, female to male, at College of Charleston. But coaches brought up to date the statistics for that school, and it's amazing. Because even walking down King Street, like you mentioned, very busy. School is out now, and the students have mostly gone away. But there are a lot of co-eds that were walking around in their workout, what would be deemed as a workout. You know, a lot of yoga pants going on, too, and stuff. But, you know, it's just all over the place.
Yeah, the guys enjoyed King Street. Let me just put it that way. And the crazy thing, if you're at, we call it the two bridge rule. And if you're at Citadel, and this is from the commandant, who is like our dean of students, but he runs everything. If you have to be two bridges away to be out of uniform, and that's nowhere on the peninsula. You know, that means you got to go to Isle of Palms or go to Folly Beach or go well past North Charleston to be two bridges away. So anytime you're on the peninsula where College of Charleston is, where King Street is, you had to be in full uniform. And so guys didn't like that a whole lot. So we had some things working against us, but the education's amazing. The relationships you make there are amazing, just like VMI. I mean, they're both great, great schools and have a lot of degree value once you graduate.
All right, so here's a Carolina guy. We're talking to Coach Malcolm. But he's a North Carolina guy that's now a South Carolina guy. You know, your old friends might have a little bit of rub about that.
I got a mom and sister that still live in Charlotte, in Davison and Cornelius. And I don't think I told you this. I have a sister who's a 3 handicap in golf. Who can really, really play. And, I'm a North Carolina guy, born and bred, but this is where we're going to end up, Keith. This is we feel like we found paradise down here, and we're not leaving Charleston.
You know, I could tell, and it keeps telling people all about the city anyway, being a tour guide. So you transition over, and you mentioned that, and I mentioned earlier in your show, about you majoring in history. You do it because you really like it, I'm guessing. I mean, coach's money when you got out of the game wasn't quite as big as it is now, but still, I'm thinking you have a nice little nest egg somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, I do this. It's a great retirement gig. Now, to be perfectly honest, I majored in history because I wasn't good in any of the other subjects. I could remember things, and that's kind of what history is, remembering things and then writing about it. And I could do that, but critical thinking, science, math, physics, that wasn't my jam. That I wasn't good at that. But I could remember things, and I could write a little bit. So history was just the perfect avenue there. And who thought, you know, 20-plus years later I'd be using my degree?
Yeah, I don't know who would have thought. I guess you might have thought that. My father would never let me major in history, not that I even would broach that subject. And I suffer from CRS, Coach. So, yeah, that's not good for the memory either from that standpoint. But when you're coaching, you have to motivate. You have to keep the players wanting to go to class and wanting to take the tests. And when you're in the military academy, I mentioned the United States Naval Academy, who I'm familiar with, of the way they operate. It's some tough business. You know, you got a lot of studying to do. When we traveled on the road, I bunked with the professor that was with the team. You know, it's just, Professor Gumba, you know, we developed a great relationship that way. But he was always working. I mean, the only time he wasn't working was when the players were either at chow or they were on the court practicing. That was about it.
Yeah, those kids, the daily grind. If you're in a military school, a regular student at a normal school just would have no comprehension of what that's like. I mean, even when you're on the road, we're on the bus. Instead of watching Netflix, my guys are back studying for a physics test. So that's just part of it. But what a great degree value once you get out. And I think I may have told you, my youngest son, I have four boys, and my youngest son's a Naval Academy grad, and my next oldest is a Citadel grad. So I had two of my sons go through that military experience, and it was great for both of them. I mean, the discipline it taught them and what they're doing now. They're both employed, and they're both doing wonderful things. So very, very proud of them.
Yeah, that is your legacy, Coach. I mean, you know, yes, coaching at the collegiate level, Division I, is a bit of a legacy, but it's really your offspring that you raised, and in this case, to be great young men, great citizens.
Well, I have actually four, and three of them work for the government. At least one's a civilian, but they enjoy what they do. They're a little busy right now with all we got going on in the world, and their mama's a little worried, but yeah, everything will work out like it should, and we're very proud of them, and they both like serving, and we'll just see where this leads, but I think both of them want to make a career out of it.
We're talking with Coach Duggar Balcom on Tee It Up with Keith Jones. We didn't just have him on to talk about the coaching stuff, whatever. This guy at one time was like a scratch golfer when he was at VMI. So we're going to talk some golf with him as well. But, yeah, you hit this prize for me. I guess I could have pivoted and had your sister on as well. Maybe we'll do that maybe down the line. If she's a three handicap, why are you still struggling with your game?
Because she beats my brains in when we play now. She pretty much did that anyway, but, I may have mentioned, you know, when we play now, we don't play now because I've officially retired, but, if we were happen to get together and have a friendly game, we would make her move back at least to the, senior tees or to the member tees. She gets no women's tees. For my sister Kitty, that's just too big of an advantage. She'd be hitting wedge on every hole.
Yeah, we call them the forward tees now, just to stay out of trouble, Coach. We'll be back to wrap up this segment after this break. Coach Zugar, welcome on Tee It Up, Keith Jones. Yes, indeed. If you heard the name, you're like, I mean, it's his given name. You know, let's be up front here, because he said his dad gave him that name, but that's a nickname because he's named after Robert E. Lee and Benjamin Franklin, two individuals who had a lot to do with history, which brings it full circle. So Robert Franklin just doesn't get the attention as a Duggar does.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Now, I'm a junior. My dad did name me. He did name me Duggar. He hung that on me a long time ago, and I wish he had not, but he did. He thought I was too young to be or too small to be a Bob, and he was Bobby, and so I've been Duggar my whole life, so just kind of the way it worked out.
Works okay for you now. It gets you a lot of attention, and you know, better attention, I guess, than when you were growing up. You talked a little bit about that, which is I get it. I totally get it from that standpoint. But you've gone on to be very successful. I mean, in what you're doing now and promoting the city of Charleston is big, because people are, especially Northerners and people that aren't from the South or the Deep South, don't see Charleston the way they see Columbia or the way they see other parts of South Carolina. And, of course, the schools down there, obviously, USC the East is in Columbia, and Clemson's got its own little town and such. So, you know, that's really when people think outside the state of South Carolina, I think that they really think of that. Maybe some sweet tea, but that'll make you diabetic in a heartbeat. So,
yeah, if anybody does come to visit Charleston, they almost instantly love it. And a lot of people don't even know the history, you know, that so many things occurred here, revolutionary battles, Civil War battles. I mean, it's just a beautiful place. And to live here is to love it. Like I said, we don't want to live anywhere else. And it's not everywhere South Carolina. I mean, have our uniqueness, having the old houses downtown, being on the coast, having the low country food down here, which everybody loves. You figure out real quick down here, when you live down here, you can't outrun a bad diet. And you figure that out. I had to figure it out the hard way, but after about a year, my wife got me straightened out.
So in doing our research for the show, we found out that apparently you had a heart attack years ago and needed to do some things less stressful, yet you got into coaching. So how does that less stressful, Coach?
Yeah, kind of crazily. I was in law enforcement for 9 years, and Christmas Day of 90, I came home from working and fell out in the shower and spent the next 5 weeks in the hospital. Had a heart attack. My dad died at 42, and his brother died at 20. So I had the same heart disease Hank Gathers had, hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. And it hit me at 30, and they wouldn't let me go back to being a trooper in North Carolina. So went with something a lot less stressful, went the college basketball route. And I've lived such a blessed life to get to do all the things I've done, and especially with my health issues, and got them under control now. And I just see my doctors regularly. And one great thing about being in Charleston, we have a wonderful medical system down here. So got a great cardiologist, and just I've had a blessed life, an extremely blessed life.
Well, we appreciate you making time for us. And as college basketball comes back around and stuff, we'll be turning to you, I think, because now we have an inside guy, you know, dealing with all the nil nonsense and stuff, which we talked about before in the show. We're not going to get down back in those weeds with it. But the other full circle thing about your career, since I'm a Maryland guy, University of Maryland specifically, is when you were named head coach at the Citadel, you succeeded Lefty Giselle's son, Chuck.
Right. Sure did.
And
Chuck's a great guy.
He's back in D.C. He's been at the Murray School in D.C., high school-wise, coaching for a number of years and such. But that was some interesting tidbits about you. You're an interesting young man, Coach. No question about that.
Well, it's nice for you to call me young. And, you know, he had a rough year this year, but one of my closest friends in coaching is Buzz Williams. Mm. And what's crazy is he is my mother. I am my mother's second favorite Division I coach. Her first favorite is Buzz Williams. So y'all got a good coach at Maryland. He just got to get his players in there. I heard he had a great recruiting class. So I'm looking forward to seeing what they can do this year.
Yeah, me too. Coach, appreciate you making time. And now we get a name drop for Buzz as well. But we'll be back.
The Dalai Lama. So I'm on a first tee with him. I give him the driver. He hauls off and whacks one. Big hitter.
The Lama.
Long. Into a 10,000-foot crevice right at the base of this glacier. You know what the Lama says? Gunga Galunga. Gunga, Gunga Galunga.
And we are back for our second half hour of the show. We're going to take you a little further south now from Charleston down to New Orleans. And the Jazz Fest is a thing of the past, but happened a few weeks ago. But I was talking with some of my friends in town. We went out to dinner, and they said, "Oh man, it was so good!" And the Meters played, and these guys get in like they know all the clubs. They know Tipitinas, and they know all the clubs that this guest plays at. He's got the backdoor codes to all these places too. I'm talking about our buddy Jason Mingledorf, known as Big Wind around the city. We call him Professor Big Wind because obviously he teaches over at Loyola. School is out, so he's happy about that, I am sure. Man, Jason, first of all, thanks for making time. We had to wait till after Jazz Fest when you got a minute or two to come on the show because you were everywhere, and I kept hearing about it, and I kept seeing it, and you know, you were tearing up the social media stuff, and people were posting and stuff, and you got to play with the incredible Meters.
Yes, I'm still pinching myself.
Well, that's a group that my friend Lee and Dave, these guys are down. Dave went to Jazz Fest so many times over the years that he ended up buying a house in New Orleans. So he's in like the Flower District, but it's a nice house. To doing some rehab, which I think you always have to do to your houses in New Orleans specifically. But those guys just love Jazz Fest, and we, you know, you and I met a couple years ago now, which is pretty crazy, but got a chance to get into Tipitinas with those two knuckleheads and watch you on stage. Who is that guy who's melting the faces of people on the dance floor? You know, so it's, you just do it, and it's, you know, it's incredible to watch. And obviously, you are one of the most sought after, not the most sought after, certainly one of the most sought after horn players, specifically saxophone, in New Orleans, even when it's not Jazz Fest. So you really, your reputation obviously precedes you now.
Well, I feel fortunate in a town with many great saxophonists that I get to play with so many cool players.
Yeah, there are so many guys, you know, and I like this music community that I've stumbled upon in New Orleans, and I'm not talking about during Jazz Fest. You go the tail end of Jazz Fest, and you go at night and you see again these clubs and stuff, but the camaraderie and everything in that community, because it is amazing, because it doesn't have to be, and there could be guys banging heads, you guys, no, I don't want to sit with that guy, I don't want to try to, you know, match that guy or whatever, but you never see that.
Yeah, I think about this a lot. I wonder if part of it is because there's a lot of gigs to go around, so it's not as competitive. Like, I know in certain parts of the country, there might be only one or two gigs, so there's a kind of, people can get territorial and compete with each other. And here, there's a lot to go around. I mean, any night of the week, there's 50 venues with live music, and probably another 50 venues with private music, you know, like for conventions and stuff. So there's plenty of gigs to go around. So my fellow saxophone players, we're all friends because we all get each other work, you know.
Yeah, so you're talking about when it's not Jazz Fest. You're talking about just a general week?
Oh, yeah, not even just a general week. You look up they have a thing here called the Live Wire, WWOZ, and they list all the music each night. And you can go through the listing. It's about 50 bands playing every night, and that's just public. That doesn't include all the brunches and the conventions and the weddings and all those kind of things. So there's recently there's a photographer that comes to Jazz Fest every year, and he does a picture where he gets all that's of one instrument, as many as he can, to put together. And he asked me to help him find all the saxophonists that are working professional saxophonists in New Orleans. And we had close to 200 that we are able to find. I'm sure there's a lot we didn't even get. So, and they're all working. We work all the time. I love that there's not much competition at all and stuff. I consider the other saxophonists around town some of my best friends.
Is that why guys migrate to a place like New Orleans?
Oh, definitely. I mean, and it's happened more. I've noticed some people moving even from New York and stuff, because I think there's probably more gigs, or they like the vibe of the scene. And we welcome them as long as, if any great players come to town, I think it's great for the scene. It makes us all better. Sometimes people come, if they come just for gigs, they usually don't stay for too long. The people who come and really love the scene and love the music and love New Orleans culture, those are the ones that kind of usually end up staying and really feeling welcomed.
Well, it's hard not to get sucked into most of that stuff you just ran
yeah,
by.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
I was in Charleston earlier this week, and they have a French Quarter as well. Not nearly as good, obviously, but sorry, my South Carolinian friends on that. But, there's definitely the Creole influences, and the French obviously came through that part of town as well and such. So I did sample the jambalaya. They thought it was super fantastic because they've got that South Carolina/Charleston rice that is produced in abundance over the centuries and such. But you hate to compare, but you always compare, right? It's the same way with musicians, right? It's the same thing. You can't help but compare.
I remember visiting Charleston and thinking it reminded me a lot of New Orleans downtown, which makes me feel very comfortable.
Yeah, it doesn't quite have the music scene, but it does have
no place has that.
That's exactly.
But got really good food there, I'll tell you that.
It's hard not to get sucked into that too. The grouper was fantastic, and you can go on and on. We're not a food show, but let me tell you, we cover a lot of topics.
Yeah,
from that standpoint. But what was your favorite thing? Obviously, I'm going to take it as the meters was your absolute favorite part of the Jazz Fest. But what was the short list?
Definitely the meters, and we can talk more about that later. That was something I've been looking for. I really honestly never thought I'd get to play with them, that was so memorable. I just couldn't believe I was there. Some other great gigs. My brass band, the New Orleans Nightcrawlers. That's the band that won the Grammy and was nominated for another one. We, for the first time, were on the big stage at Jazz Fest. And they hooked us up with these little portable mics, wireless mics we never used before, and we were all over the city. We had a great gig. That's one of our best Jazz Fest gigs we've ever had. So that was a lot of fun. I did a couple of gigs with a band. I don't know if you've ever heard of the band called Dragon Smoke.
Heard of them, but I couldn't. I defer to you to lay
that. It's a couple guys from Galactic, the bass player and drummer from Galactic, and Eric Lindell, who's a great singer-songwriter, and Ivan Neville. So it's kind of like a super group. And I was subbing for my friend Brad Walker, because he had some other gigs. And for me, it was a blast, because I used to play in Galactic in the early days. So it was fun to just play. I've done gigs here and there with some of those guys, but for instance, the bass player, Robert, I can't even remember the last time I did a gig with him. And so, and I used to play with Eric Lindell like 25 years ago. I used to play with Eric. So it was a lot of fun to kind of get back with them and play. I played Jazz Fest with them, and I played a gig to Patinas with them. And so that was a lot of fun. Also, my friend Eddie Roberts, who has the band that do Master Sounds, he's got a new kind of super group with Robert Walter, who's a great organ player, who tours with Roger Waters from Pink Floyd. Mm-hmm. And him and Stanton Moore, they have a little trio, and I did a gig with them, and that was a lot of fun. So those are, from the top of my, you know, like my mind, that's, those are, oh, and also I did a lot of groups, a lot of gigs with this reggae ska rocksteady band I play in called Shantytown Underground, led by Papa Molly. And Jamaica was the featured country this year. Jazz, every year they have a country they'll feature the music of, and they'll bring in artists from that country. Last year it was Mexico, and this year it was Jamaica. So a lot of, they have a special stage with almost all Jamaican music. They got Jamaican food, and we played like 4 gigs throughout the week, which is more than we play in a whole year usually. And so that was a blast.
Wow, that's good. That's crazy. We're talking to Jason Mingledorf on Teed Up with Keith Jones. I call him Professor Big Wind. He's known around town as Big Wind. And if you ever get a chance to see this guy play, I'd say hear him on he's on a lot of recordings and such. So you hear it, but until you see it, you know, you understand why your face gets so hot. It's the melting part from that standpoint. You mentioned Dragon Smoke, and I knew I had heard of him because my buddy Lee is a big Galactic fan. So he's been following that to introduce me to them, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago from that standpoint. So it just comes full circle all the time when you're around Jazz Fest.
It was fun kind of catching up with those guys. You know, we used to when I toured with Galactic, I did all the East Coast tours with them back in the late 90s. And we would make D.C. Actually, Chevy Chase was our home base because 2 of the guys in the band grew up there. And their houses they grew up in were like on the same street. So we would stay there and use that as a little hub and tour all over the East Coast from there. And so it was fun kind of catching up with them. I can't believe it's been that long. It feels like a lifetime ago when I was in that band.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned D.C. and probably because I know that you got a gig coming up with the New Orleans Suspects. That's an interesting group. That's in June, which isn't that far off, on one night at the Hamilton. So that'll be super exciting. And then apparently you're then up the road to Philadelphia, so where it was a couple weeks ago. So yeah.
Yeah, that's a great band. That band originally started with like the guitar player who started. He used to be in the Dirty Dozen, and he used to use a couple of the horn players from the Dirty Dozen and the drummer Willie Green from the Dirty Dozen. And then for a while, he had the sax player Jeff Watkins, who was James Brown's saxophone player for many years. Now the regular saxophone player is a wonderful saxophone player, Brad Walker. And I'm subbing for him, but I get to play with them a lot, and they're all really good friends.
Well, that's the other thing too. You actually make a friendship with the different guys, and then it's not that people are interchangeable, but you have that opportunity. If somebody goes down for some reason, then you know you can take another guy and plug them right in.
There's a joke that goes around New Orleans that says there's only like 3 bands in New Orleans, but they each have 100 members.
That's a pretty good joke.
And it's kind of close to true almost. There's one brass band and there's one, you know, funk band and one trad band, whatever. But we do interchange a lot, I would say, and it's nothing special about me, but the fact that I'm probably in about 10 different bands that work semi-regularly, and my schedule just kind of is whenever they're all working, you know.
Yeah, well, I take exception to the same. My friend saying there's nothing special about him, because you also teach. So, you know, your skills, your talents, you try to expose to the youngsters coming up too. And you got some pretty tight quintets and all kinds of horn sections going on at Loyola.
I've got some really good students now. You know, I think sometimes it goes in cycles, although I really started kind of taking control of the saxophone department during COVID. And so now the students that are coming in there, they know what they're getting. They're coming to study with me or with Wes Anderson, our other saxophone teacher. And it has been a blast. I've got some amazing students that are doing great things. And Loyola's great to work for. They just kind of let me do my thing. I have a big band that I teach, and I have a small jazz ensemble, and I have a saxophone ensemble. And it's great for me because I learn from teaching these kids. I mean, I have to kind of stay one step ahead of them. So, and it's a young environment. They're always listening to new stuff, so I'm always getting turned on to new things.
Well, you're a busy man. I don't know how you do it all in your scheduling and such and all the gigs. And how does Jazz Fest come together from a musician's standpoint?
Well, it's very interesting because a lot of bands, of course, Jazz Fest is a big gig for them. And they always, almost every band wants it to be a special performance. So if you see a band at Jazz Fest, it's not like their normal gig. They're going to bring extra horns. They're going to do extra songs. They might throw in dancers. You never know what they're going to do. They're going to add, and they're going to have rehearsals. And so that's one thing that we all have to navigate. It's like usually coming into Jazz Fest, every band we're playing with, they want to have rehearsals at the same time. And so that's something that as we are getting into Jazz Fest, we have to navigate that. We have to navigate. Unfortunately, it's also, we got to navigate, how can we get, can we get parking passes? How are we going to get to Jazz Fest? It's coveted because they only give out a couple of parking passes per band. So if you're lucky enough to get a parking pass, that's another thing. Cause you know, usually we're also trying to navigate getting from gig to gig. One day this Jazz Fest, I had 5 gigs in one day. So just the navigating and preparing for that is this whole other endeavor.
That's why I asked, because I know you're out of your mind to begin with, but it's like all these logistics, you know, it's not just getting up on stage and playing. It's logistically all that stuff you said along the way, getting getting set up. You got to have set up time, so you can't just get there and, you know, go right up on the stage. I mean, there's a lot of nuances.
Oh, it's a lot. And I know some guys, they'll just hire somebody to help set up their stuff at the next gig or give them a ride. I had a friend I played with the other day, and I think he had close to 30 gigs in the 2-week period.
I don't even have any idea how you do that. I mean, five is enough from that standpoint, but 30 I don't know. But Jason Mingledorfer is with us. He's a guy that knows, a renowned Grammy Award winning musician and one of New Orleans' most versatile and in-demand saxophonists. He's been doing it for decades. Back to wrap up the show with Professor Big Win after this break.
All right, this is Trey Cool from Green Day, and we're teeing it up with Keith Jones like we always do. It's a habit we can't stop.
I think I just like saying Professor Big Win. That's moniker that I mean, the
I'll
professor.
I'll put it on my door.
You should. That's exactly what you should do. Yeah, you know, we'll have to have the plaque made up for you or something. That's exactly right. Well, you know, because, I mean, Big Win is like, that's just like a braggart, you know. I mean, I know somebody gave you the nickname but because the way you blow that horn, but or the whatever horns. How many horns do you have? I saw a silver one. I saw your vintage one.
I'm not crazy with the horns. I have 2 tenor saxophones. I have one alto saxophone, I have a soprano saxophone, I have a baritone saxophone. I also recently bought a saxophone that has no keys on it.
What?
Which, yes, it's a keyless saxophone. And, you know, a weird thing, I made a video of myself playing it, and for some, it went, I don't know what constitutes viral, but it's almost hit 500,000 views. And like, eight, you know, on Instagram. So I have all these random people saying, I saw you playing this saxophone with no keys. But I use it to warm up. I would never play it on a gig, but it's a practice saxophone. So you know, I have a couple clarinets, a flute, a couple flutes and stuff like that. But I know guys that have hundreds of saxophones, which is crazy to me. Yeah.
You can't play them all at one time. That's
right. Yeah. I mean, my money usually ends up going to, I got three boys, it's a lot of
food.
Going out to eat is expensive. So
exactly right. I don't think I've ever asked you this, on air or off, but I'm going to do this. And for people who are unfamiliar with this instrument, I'm going to ask about, we'll explain what it is. What is your take on an iwi?
Well, I am a little opinionated about this.
Oh, there we go. Down the rabbit hole. Go ahead. Hippity-hoppity.
I am not a fan of the iwi. Now, I have seen it performed very, like, I saw Bob Minster with the Yellow Jackets. They came to town last year, and he played some iwi, and he sounded amazing on it. And there were moments of that I was like, oh, I can see why this is a thing. But in general, if I were listening to it, like on a recording, I would just think it's like a synthesizer, you know, and I like the sound of a sax too much. I just love the sound of a saxophone, like a real saxophone. So when the real saxophone plays, I'm like drawn into it. But the sound of a synthesizer, it just like, I don't know, it just sounds like a keyboard. So for instance, there's a famous saxophone player named Michael Brecker.
Sure.
He's like one of the most famous practitioners of the iwi, the electronic wind instrument, and he would use it on his records. But I can remember a song, I would listen to him, his records, and he'd be playing a long iwi solo, and I'm like, oh, that's cool, a lot of notes, whatever. And then he would bring the sax out and play it, and I was just like, oh yes, this is what I like. So I'm definitely a fan of a real saxophone. I know the iwi is cool, you can make all kind of sounds with it and stuff. But I know some guys, instead of learning how to play flute, they just make a flute sound on the iwi. Well, I'd rather just learn how to play flute and play that, you know?
Yeah.
I'm curious, what are your thoughts on the iwi?
I asked the experts. I asked the guys that know. I know that they're pricey, and I've looked at them in the past and such, but not going to pull the trigger till I know it's worth it. But no, I got a couple horns I need to dust off. So that's where I'm at. I already have some big boys, and they just
know some guys that play them and love them. But I'm also a little bit of a Luddite. I'm just old fashioned. Any kind of electronics, like, and I know guys use effects pedals on the saxophone and stuff. I'm not good with any of that kind of technical stuff. Just give me a saxophone. That's all.
Watch him melt your face. Would you say a Luggite? Was that the word I just learned?
A Luddite. I need a Luddite. I think a Luddite. I don't know if I'm even saying that right, but that's a person, you know, who is not into technology.
Okay, I got you. But just in the Neanderthal, like, that's fine. We like that. Yeah. You know, that's no problem. All right, my man. I appreciate it much, Jason Mingledorf, Professor Big Wind, as we like to call him, my guest on Tito with Keith Jones. We're just out of time. What a great show. Thanks so much to Coach for coming on as well. And of course, the wind is always welcome on this show. But we're just out of time. Get out there and practice. Practice your game. Practice your life. Practice your horn. Whatever you do. Practice. Take your game to the next level. And we will talk to you next week. Take care.